Welcome to What in God's Name. He's Chris Owen.
And she is Shayna Appel.
And it's good to be together again in this evening session.
We're having an evening session. Shayna has been busy today at a fire in Townsend, Massachusetts.
Well, the fire's out. We're busy trying to place people who are displaced by it. But it's been a couple of days.
We're doing current events and culture from a philosophical and theological point of view. Today, we're looking at masculinity. So we have an Answering Albert segment today on masculinity. Albert Moeller is the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He has a daily podcast called The Briefing, and so the clips you will hear are from that podcast. A very popular podcast. Sometimes we agree with Albert, and sometimes we disagree. We engage the ideas and hopefully shed light on his thinking and on our own thinking. The segments that we're going to hear today from Albert Moeller come from his reflections on the YouTube video that Gillette released, The Best Men Can Be. It was a marketing video that went out on YouTube in the middle of January, and it contains a series of images that are anti-bullying and anti-sexual harassment. And some critics of this video think it makes it look like most men engage in bad behavior. And so the video has been criticized. So Albert, just setting up the scene for us, let's cue the music. We have our special Albert Moeller Answering Albert music, which is dramatic. So here, let's listen to segment number one. Again, Albert is talking about the two-minute YouTube video that Gillette released last month.
I have viewed the video several times just to make sure I didn't miss the main point, but in essence, the main point is unmistakable. Gillette is trying to do cultural placement in this ad. It's known as virtue signaling. It is meaning to enter into contemporary controversies in such a way that the brand is identified with the Me Too movement. Now, that might seem, at least at face value, to be a very dangerous strategy for a brand that has been built upon masculinity. As the Wall Street Journal and other media have observed, Gillette has not been subtle over the last several decades in trying to stake out its claim that a certain kind of masculine man uses its products. But now, as others have noted, it appears to be criticizing, that's a mild term, the very product consumers that it has been building as a consumer base for so long. But now we're looking at the fact that Gillette has engendered a tremendous amount of controversy. The ad is a symptom of the larger cultural problem, condemning toxic masculinity while appearing to have no idea of what healthy masculinity might be. There is a huge confusion in the entire culture right now over what it means to be a man. We are looking at a transformation of just about everything in our society. Modernity is leaving nothing untransformed, no question unasked, no certainty left certain. And that comes down in our own generation to the question of gender, what it means to be male or female.
So, Shayna, what I hear in this opening part from Albert Moeller's podcast, The Briefing, is something I agree with, which is this notion that in our culture, masculinity, we have a hard time understanding what it means to be a man in this culture. I think he's identified something important.
Well, I would agree. I think there have been accepted norms of masculinity, and now those accepted norms are no longer accepted. And so there's some challenge there.
Yeah. So we just wanted to start with that. Just start with this basic agreement about the observation that understanding masculinity and femininity in this time where things are changing so much. I mean, Albert mentions how much change there is in our culture. It is a challenge, and so it's really worth our time. So we finished listening to a first segment of Albert Moeller. Let's listen to another piece.
We also have to honestly assess that in the wake of the LGBTQ revolution, vast sectors of our society can't even use the terms male and female, boy and girl, man or woman, mother or father, brother or sister, with anything but a sense of nostalgia or irony. Some people actually see those words themselves as symptomatic of a binary when it comes to gender that must be overcome.
So, Shana, when I listen to this one, I just have to ask you a question. I'm really curious about this sense of, you know, Albert Mohler is saying that there are people who want to do away with the binary. And I'm not quite sure what he means when he's saying that. But regardless of what he means, my question to you is that true that some people want to get rid of the binary?
I have heard people say that they wish not to be identified by either of the binary genders. And it's one of the reasons why when we ask what pronouns people prefer, some will say she, hers, he, his, others will say they, theirs, because they prefer not to be categorized or held by either of the binary, what would feel to some people, I would imagine, like a binary extreme. So there was a body of work that came out a number of years ago that looked at human sexuality and gender identity as an outcome, if you will, of looking at four different continuums. So the first continuum is purely biological. So what body parts were you born with? What is your body chemistry? We say something is purely biological, I think most people think, well, that's easy. You're either clearly male or female. But I think once you get into levels of hormones that, you know, you can see it is possible that those things might not be as clearly one or the other as some might be comfortable thinking. So biology is one of the continuums. Another one of the continuums is how a person identifies on the inside. How do they feel on the inside? The third continuum is how does the world judge them? How does the world see them and respond to them? And the fourth continuum has to do with sexual attraction. So the thought process is that we get to human sexuality and gender identity by looking at where a person lands on each of those four continuums. And I think when you look at it in that light, it's obvious that it's not so clear, that things are not just this or that, but rather are some shade along the continuum. That seems to be a body of work Albert is not all that familiar with.
My follow-up question is, someone who identifies as they, might a person who identifies as they deny that there is such a thing as masculinity and or femininity? And would you agree with that? Because I feel like that there are, you know, I think of yin and yang. If I think of the way the world is made, it's almost, you know, you think of the medieval view of the world, there were four elements.
Right.
Earth, air, water, and fire.
Mm-hmm.
I almost think the same way with regards to masculine and feminine. Like there is, and name them how you will, but mm-hmm. I think masculine and feminine is a fair, that's a fair way to think that these are powers or principles or forces at work in the world. So my worldview would not say that those things didn't exist. I think they're in the fabric of the world.
I think they can be helpful descriptors. They can also be limiting descriptors. I know the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus is a great book in the sense that in the work that I've done with couples, whether the couple is male, female, two females, two men, I've seen that dynamic play out. It's just that it's not exclusively, not all men are Martians and not all women are Venusians. Some women are Martians. Some males are Venusians. So, you know, it's that sort of thing where one has to have the sort of flexibility or the willingness to know an individual as they are. You know, I don't know that you can say you know someone unless you have a pretty good sense of how they see themselves, unless you have that understanding.
Right. Which is one of the four continuums you mentioned, right? How do I perceive myself? How do I experience myself?
Yeah.
Let's listen to another segment of Albert Mohler.
Now, Gillette can't possibly sell razor blades and other equipment to men. It can't sell its products to men who identify as masculine if it's going to deny masculinity.
So, Shana, in this section, Albert Mohler talks about how this Gillette video denies masculinity, but I didn't see it that way. I see what the video's intent is to deal with this sense of toxic masculinity. And so I wanted to talk to you about that as we think about our culture and look at our culture and what is toxic masculinity. What you just said to me off the air, which I thought was interesting, if I can remember it, what I heard you say is this: the toxicity is being stuck rigidly in a stereotypical role.
Right. Am I getting that right? Yes, that what makes it toxic is not exclusive to masculinity, because there can be toxic femininity too. And that is, I think it becomes toxic when it is applied to someone like an applique and they can't get it off. There's no freedom within how society defines you to be who it is authentically that God made you to be. That's what makes it toxic.
That, I think, is a great theological understanding of that. And what I latch on to what you say is this sense of lack of freedom. When we are living our fullest life, we are fully free. And so I'm thinking of the internal dynamic of somebody who might be caught in what we would call toxic masculinity or toxic femininity.
Yeah, and you and
you
I
want to go that way
you
too.
And I have friends who will tell stories about, you know, what it felt like to be locked into not being able to cry, or not, you know, if you're a guy, not being able to be sensitive to something, even though they felt sensitive to whatever was going on. You know, they felt they couldn't react to that.
And why can't they?
Yeah, or for women, we're not allowed to be angry, right? That's toxic femininity. Anytime a woman gets angry, you know, she gets shut down, shut off, and shut out.
And is there a shame dynamic at work in that?
Absolutely.
So to me, the shame dynamic is really strong.
It's very strong, and I hear it from women who will talk about getting into circumstances with coworkers or bosses where, you know, where they find themselves crying in an instance where they really wish they hadn't cried. What they really wish they had done was got angry, because that's how they felt.
Yeah.
But it's like culturally, we're not inculcated to feel anger or express anger. And so when we get into a situation where our anger would be thoroughly appropriate, instead it gets choked and ends up coming out as tears. And all of that is toxic. All of that it's toxic to everyone.
So for our audience who's not Christian, which I know we have non-Christian listeners, I just want to lift up that Shana and I speak in this language. It's natural to us. We live in the language of Christianity.
We're both Christian ministers. Yes, that's true. I am also a Unitarian Universalist minister and a cultural Jew. So I'm definitely grounded in I can't help but think, you know, in multiple frames.
So as we identify that, I also am saying that not in a way that is meant to be that you should think the same way we do, but rather, here is how we think, and we want to know what you think and how you think about these things in conversation. We don't want to be the kind of Christians who say, this is the way, and that's the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
We want to say, here's how we think about it from how we see who Jesus is and what our scriptures say.
And wow, speaking of Jesus, like, would anybody accuse him of toxic masculinity? I don't think so.
You know, to psychologize Jesus, that would be an
That'd
example
be a reach.
Of a fully
actualized,
fully integrated,
yes. Fully integrated, actualized human being.
Yeah. Shana, let's listen to this little segment in Albert's podcast that both you and I, as we were preparing for this show, we just marked this one for the big foghorn. So,
yeah.
listeners,
gird your loins. Here it comes.
The foghorn.
The foghorn is what Chris and I blow when we feel that Albert is coming precariously close to wrecking on the rocks, and we want to give him a warning to get him to turn away from the danger zone. So here it is.
And then Shana and I will debrief.
Now, we know that those on the left want to attack every form of masculinity.
We know that those on the left want to attack every form of masculinity. Wow.
First of all, he's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, if you are coming at this from a perspective of faith, why do you, from the very top, use political categories?
What? Why do those on the left? Is that what you're pointing
yes.
out? Yeah, those on the left.
Yes.
So, well, and because God, you know, in Albert's world, there's nobody in his church that's on the left.
Yeah.
So hopefully none of his biggest contributors would identify as on the left, because if they did, he just alienated them
all. So there might be some people who want to deny any form of masculinity. Those people might exist.
Back in the early 80s, you know, I remember the separatist lesbian movement that had absolutely no use for anything masculine whatsoever. Ironically, there were a lot of butches in that movement. So, you know, it kind of made you scratch your head and go, hmm. But to try to categorize as, you know, we know those on the left. Well, you know, who is that, for starters? You know, and to assert that those on the left want to attack every form of masculinity, like, I think the language there is very, gives us insight. And, you know, kind of makes me want to say to Albert, so I hear you're feeling attacked, and tell me more about that. But I don't think that standing up against bullying, I don't think that standing up against violence is an attack on everything masculine, because while those activities are often and largely carried out by men in our society, they are not exclusively so. Women can be also incredibly violent and incredibly hurtful, but the toxic masculinity that does not give young boys and young men and middle-aged men and older men an opportunity to be authentically, wholly, and fully who they are, fully self-expressed, that's toxic. But then the same thing could be said about women.
So, agreed. And I'm going to try to say my slightly different point a different way. Part of my objection is that he's lumping the left, whatever that is. You know, we need to interrogate that, question that. But my further question is, why would someone who is identifying as Christian or identifying in any faith tradition and speaking, I mean, his show, his podcast is Current Events, the World, from a Christian point of view. So if you are speaking, if from that perspective, why do you go to the categories of politics?
Do you have a supposition for that?
I think it's because I don't have evidence for Albert Mohler. Like, mm-hmm. I haven't asked him, so I can only suppose. And I think that he is doing it for the same reason that a lot of the media does this, which is to drive the division, mm-hmm. and he's speaking to his audience, which is probably on the red team, and that is more readily understandable by people than trying to
nuance
a Christian perspective.
So what does he have to gain by it, or what does anyone, because we don't know if that's what he intended or not, but we know that that is a practice that is commonplace in our world today. And I'm trying to understand what it is that people think they have to gain by dividing, unless their intention is to conquer the whole.
It's lucrative to speak to your team.
Wow, I guess we should figure out who our team is. Maybe.
Well, that's
this is lucrative. I mean, this gets we back could to, actually make some money at this yeah.
Well, this gets back to the conversation we had several weeks ago about my feeling like our audience is a niche audience, and you said it's a big niche, but I think it's a difficult niche, because if we're trying to appeal to something that's more fundamental to our humanity than our political affiliation, well, that's not a way that our culture thinks at this time.
Yeah, no, it doesn't value that.
And so that's, you know, that's how I also see us reaching out to people of other faith traditions as well, because that's a view of the human being that's prior to the political affiliation or the political tribe or the political team. So I want Albert Mohler to engage at that level and not just fall into this default, oh, the left says this, because that just plays into the division and the teams.
Yeah, I would agree.
Let's listen to the last bit of this Albert Mohler piece.
Oh, yay.
Because there's more to say.
It is biological, and as Christians understand, it is rooted in God's glory and in his good intention in creation. Men and women are different because God intended men and women to be different and made that difference a part of the glory of creation so that men and women complement each other as husband and wife, as mother and father in the raising of children. Like everything in creation after the fall, that intention can be distorted. His glory can be hidden, but his glory still remains and it continues to shine through, such that human flourishing takes place if and only if human beings follow God's intention, his design, his commandments, as revealed not only in Scripture, but furthermore in nature.
So, Chris, when I listen to this last segment, what I'm hearing is Albert reducing what is male and what is female to pure biology.
So Albert is going to respond to you by saying, no, it's not biology. It's the way God made humans. God made male and female, and he made them complementary.
But what he's speaking to, again, and we go back to the four continuums, what he's speaking to is biology. And he is not taking into consideration any of the other three continuums.
Okay, so
I'm just saying it's a limited view. Yeah.
When I think of this sense of male and female, he made them male and female, and I try to integrate this sense of continuum into that picture. Here's what I come up with. God also made light and dark, day and night, and so those are complementary, and they're binary, but there's first light, and there's dawn. There's all these in-between
right. There's all these in-between things.
Where it's not midnight, and it's not high noon, it's twilight.
It's twilight.
But what I want to say here about following God's intention is that sometimes following God's intention is more like being a playful co-creator. So if you and
yes.
I were doing improv.
Yes.
Improv is a beautiful
if
example.
If we were doing improv. Isn't that what this whole show is, improv?
So there, you know, following the other person's intention is playful.
Is a dance.
It's a dance.
But it requires an openness. It requires compassion. It requires empathy. It requires yielding. All of these things, which, by the way, I just want to say, are not contrary to the masculine, nor are they the exclusive domain of the feminine. So are we against all that is masculine? No, we're not. But we are taking a stand. Some of us are taking a stand against what we perceive as being toxic masculinity.
Yeah. Is it time to be curious?
It is time to go deep, Chris.
And it's time to shed light.
He's Chris Owen.
She is Shana Appel. Shana, it's so wonderful to spend time with you as always.
It has been wonderful to spend this time with you, Chris, and to have a reprieve from the last 2 days of difficult work. Difficult but majestic work.
There will be a show next Friday, and I'm going to have a guest host. For details, go to our website, whatingods.com. Thanks for listening.